Recent snow have you down? The Handy Guys discuss snowblowers coming up next.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, where we work together on that honey-do list, featuring head-to-head tool challenges and your questions. Here are the Handy Guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
Welcome to a special edition of the Handy Guys Podcast. It's special because of the numbering.
That's right. It's episode 50 and a half.
50.5.
50.5,
come on,
right.
Brian. We're in a digital age here, and we have a special episode here this evening or today or whenever you're listening to this podcast. It is an episode on snowblowers, and we know it's a little bit late in the season, but we're still getting bombarded with snow. And as I shoveled my walk today, I thought, you know, we should do a show on snowblowers.
That's right. So here we are. We've moved this up in the rotation, hence 50 and a half. We've already recorded 51 and 52 and
Shh, don't tell them.
So we want to get this one out earlier, hence the name 50.5.
And Brian, as a result of thinking about snowblowers, I happened to catch an article a couple weeks ago in the Wall Street Journal, you know, my favorite newspaper.
That's right.
I was reading on
all the home improvement tips in there, right? And everything.
Yeah, right. Actually, there are some here and there. And I was reading on US Air flight back from Chicago, where it was -5, and I saw a good article on snowblowers. And I thought, you know, I want to interview this author. Her name is Gwendolyn Bounds, to get more information, because it looked like she's done a lot of research on snowblowers and actually tested several different models.
She actually did the testing. Well, we'll have to ask her about that, though.
All right, let's talk to Gwendolyn. Oh, but before we do that, Brian, we need to give out our contact information.
Yes, we do, Paul. So you can always call us at area code 615-676-0877.
You can email us at us@handyguyspodcast.com, or you could just stop by and shovel our walks.
Yeah, that'd be great. I still need to do mine, Paul.
All right, let's give a call to Wendy.
Wendy Bounds.
Hi, Wendy. This is Paul Shane with the Handy Guys Podcast.
Hey, Paul. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Wendy, this is Brian Peppel, too. How are you doing?
Hey, Brian. How are you guys doing?
All right.
We're here with Wendy Bounds from the Wall Street Journal. And Wendy, I was just recently flying back from Chicago, reading my Wall Street Journal, and I came across your articles on snowblowers. And they were very timely, considering it snowed the whole time I was in Chicago. And we just got snow here today in Philadelphia. And you said you had obviously had snow. You're in New York, correct?
Yep, I'm in New York, and you were probably very lucky to get out of Chicago. And I just used my snowblower this morning, so we're in really good shape.
That's for sure. And well, welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast. And
thanks.
It's great to have you on. And you wrote a couple very interesting articles on snowblowers, and one was more on how sales of snowblowers this year have been very strong for obvious reasons. Once we're getting a lot of snow, and you also had some other interesting comments about how people want to make sure they get to work, especially since, you know, people are concerned about losing their jobs. But also, I thought it was the other article was kind of interesting because you did it more from a woman's perspective and whether, you know, you could handle these snowblowers. Why don't you tell us about your whole experience of testing snowblowers and going through that whole rigmarole?
Sure. Well, it's just like you said. I mean, I had been hearing from manufacturers that they had been, you know, tweaking these models so that they would be easier to use, both for women and for, you know, guys who aren't necessarily built like Paul Bunyan. You know, this happens with a lot of different, you know, tool product categories, especially when the male market gets saturated. You'll see them then say, how can we expand sales? And then they start to look at the female market. We saw that happen a couple years ago with chainsaws. And I actually tested a bunch of chainsaws at the time and found that, yep, indeed, you can start them pretty easily without, you know, pulling your arm out of the socket. And the same thing has really happened with snow throwers. So I live in the Northeast, and, you know, like a lot of people, you guys probably too, I've had a professional plow come, and they're very steady, they're reliable, but the problem is I have a gravel driveway, and inevitably the gravel ends up in an enormous pile frozen at the end of the driveway, which I then have to spend hours in the spring, you know, shoveling it back.
Sure.
And other people just don't have time to wait for the plow. So I tested some of these newest models, ranging from tiny little electric shovels that you can actually just use to shovel your walk, all the way up to some pretty big 250 cc Briggs & Stratton engine, a Craftsman model that had 28-inch clearance that was pretty hefty, and had really good experiences with all of them. You know, I found that they could maneuver quite easily. They had some power steering controls that made it, you know, a lot easier for me. I only weigh about 125 pounds, so here I was wrestling with something that was almost twice my body weight, and I was able to, you know, I have a pretty big driveway, and I was able to clear everything in about in under an hour, and that was just at the first attempt. So it all went very well.
Now, you said you were able to handle these machines. How about getting them delivered to your house? Did you have any problems, you know, getting them unboxed? And because, you know, I know that sometimes that's the hardest part. You need a big truck to get them delivered, you know.
Well, you have asked the most important question of all when it comes to buying a snowblower, which is how do you get it out of your car? So, you know, I drove to Sears to pick up one, and the guy from Sears loading dock stuck it in my SUV, and he didn't seem to have any trouble. So I thought, well, this isn't going to be so bad. I got home, and you know, I basically was standing and bouncing off my bumper, trying to pull this bag, this box out. And Scott in the back of the car was pushing with my legs, and finally maneuvered it out. I think a dolly would have helped a lot more. So that'll be my next purchase. But yeah, then once you got to get them out, you got to also assemble them, and it took, you know, I mean. Men, and not all women, all have, you know, a good set of tools necessarily in their garages. I mean, some people are just more do-it-yourselfers than others. But, you know, with a good set of wrenches and, you know, just some patience in a cold garage, I was actually finally able to get them assembled. You just have to be careful to drop any parts or lose any parts and read the instructions.
So for our listeners, what do you think is the most important decision criteria when picking one? You know, you mentioned small electrics to the big behemoth and a few in between. How does someone decide? What's the most important factor in deciding what kind of snowblower to get?
Well, I think I would say first off, just decide if a snowblower in general is for you. I mean, if you you know, if you don't have a lot of time and you really do need to, you don't have time to sit in your driveway and do this, or you want to spend time with your kids on the weekend, it might be worth, you know, still having the plow. On the other hand, if you got to get out of your driveway and you don't have time to wait, it can be a very good option, particularly if you have a smaller driveway. After you made that decision, I'd say the first thing is, take into account what kind of driveway you have and just how much space you have to clear. They range from, as you guys probably know, these single-stage models, which can do smaller driveways and work well on paved driveways. They're not quite as powerful as the next stage up, these dual-stage models, but they can work very well for people who don't have a lot of space to clear. However, if you're living in the Northeast and you get a lot of snow or out in the Midwest and you get dumped on a lot, you really are going to have to look at some of these more powerful models. And, you know, from my experience, I would just say I would err on the side of getting the bigger machine rather than the smaller one, because I truly found that even, you know, I used a mid-tier one and a real heavy-duty one from Sears, and this other one was from Aaron's, and they both worked really well, but I found it actually in some cases was easier to handle the bigger model just because it had the power, steering,
right.
And it just cleared everything so much faster. So, you know, I wasn't sitting out there in the cold and wrestling with it. If you hit stuff that gets icy, it gets blocked, you know, it gets, you know, gunked up at the end of your driveway the end of the driveway where the plow pushes it doing your road. So I would just, that would be my biggest piece of advice is don't be scared to try something that's a little more powerful. Get the right machine that'll do the job and with the right, you know, the right amount of power.
So the bigger machine actually does some of the work, more of the work for you, than you don't have to, you know, use your weight or muscle to push it. In other words, they're self-powered and... So.
Definitely. And they have, you know, some nice controls that I think anyone, you know, male or female would like. I mean, they have some joysticks now that you really can, you know, still keep, you can keep your auger spinning and you can keep the motion going forward and then take one hand off and use these joystick controls to just, you know, turn your chute so that you don't have to stop and then adjust everything and then start up again. I really liked that portion. That made it a lot easier so you're not stopping and starting all the time. And again, you know, I just think with that more powerful engine, if you wait, you know, and let's say you have a little bit of light rain or it freezes, you really are going to need a bigger machine to get through some of that. So I did think some of these bigger, these newer ones that, you know, even if they look more intimidating, they may actually end in the end be better for you.
I was wondering about that for today because, you know, here in the suburbs of Philadelphia, we got, what, about 4 inches of snow here, and then it rained. And so I still haven't gotten to my driveway yet. You know, we're doing this interview and everything. And so I have 4 inches of slush to shovel, and it's very, very heavy and wet and soggy. And, you know, I don't think one of these little electric, you know, snow shovels kind of things is going to cut it for something like that.
No, probably not. I mean, and I don't know, do you have a gravel driveway?
It's paved, but it's big enough.
Yeah, big enough. I mean, you know, you probably could get away with a single stage for that, but, you know, the thing, too, about these, again, the larger models, the more heavy-duty-use dual-stage ones is that, you know, you can sort of raise them up. They have feet on the bottom that can sort of lift it up, and if, particularly if you have a gravel driveway, it can raise it up like an inch, and that's going to keep you from sort of scraping gravel, which in my case was a really big deal because I didn't want to be throwing out my gravel. You know, in your case, with a paved driveway, you might be able to get away with a single stage unit, but you know, only you would know based on, like, you know, how big the driveway is and how much snow you guys get.
What are the maintenance considerations? Have you given any thought to that? You know, if you're going to own you know, a gasoline powered piece of equipment, what type of off season maintenance and in season maintenance do you have to do? Have you given any consideration to that?
I have, because a very good friend of mine whose snowblower I kind of coveted from afar before I did this story. He and his wife have one. They've had it for about 5 years. They were a similar situation to myself, where they basically just got tired of having to deal with their driveway being torn up. And they both use it. He uses it, she uses it. But it's a snapper, and they've never had any problems with it, but they really attribute that to the fact that, you know, they take it in or they pay somebody to come and pick it up to be serviced every single year.
Wow.
To have the engine tested, you know, to, you know, change the oil, everything that needs to be done. And they're very, very conscientious about firing it up, you know, during the off-season times, just to keep things running smoothly. And I think, you know, that's one thing to consider when you're investing in one of these, because, you know, if you're pretty handy, you can do a lot of this maintenance yourself, sort of the same way you do with a leaf blower or a weed whacker. But if you don't like doing that, you got to build in on the cost factor what it's going to cost you to get one serviced, because it's certainly not going to do you any good if it's sitting in your garage taking up space that you need for your cars and your cross-country skis and your kids' basketballs and Lord only knows what else, other books and old albums you've got piled up. You know, I mean, these things are big, and you got to think about where you're going to put it. You got to think about how annoyed you're going to be in July when you're trying to get, like, stuff in and out of your garage and that thing is sitting there and you're like, oh, you know, why did I buy this? And particularly then, first snow comes in November and you haven't taken care of it, and you go to start it up and it doesn't work, and you're going to be really unhappy. And so I think, you know, the maintenance is a big thing, and I really think that people have to build that in to the cost factor, because some of these machines can cost upward of $1,000. So I would really encourage people to do the math. You know, how much are you going to save by not getting the plow? How much is that going to cost, you know, in relation to the snowblower itself? And then build in the maintenance fees every year, and build in how likely you really are to do it. So I think that's a very good question.
What I like to do when I have a friend who has a snowblower that I am coveting, I just have him run it over my driveway as well. You know,
right.
Boy, that's a nice snowblower you got. Wonder if it can handle two driveways. You know.
Yeah, I think I should try that before I did this. I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we actually do have a very nice neighbor who goes up and down, and you know, occasionally we'll do our road. But you kind of start to feel bad after a while. Like, can you come? Like, you know, you can come to my driveway too.
You are listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Now, you have a driveway that's 240 feet long, you say in this in the article, and 40 feet wide at its widest. How long does it take you with a two-stage, the high end, and how long does it take you to actually clear that?
Well, I've gotten it down. I mean, the first time out, I think it was just probably under an hour. But, I mean, again, I had never used one of these before.
Sure.
I think today I cleared maybe about 4 or 5 inches of snow in about 35 minutes. But I was being pretty meticulous, too. I mean, I did the whole thing. I have to do the whole thing because, you know, I just need to do enough in theory if I'm in a hurry to get the car out, to get the car, you know, safely across the driveway and to make sure it doesn't freeze so I have a path in. But, you know, that cleared the entire thing in 35. But I think, you know, to just get what I absolutely would have to have, I probably could have done some of that in, you know, 20 minutes or so.
But that's still pretty impressive.
It's not bad. They move along at a good clip. And I would say that, you know, the trick, what's making it easier now, and anybody will know this once they start using one, is that you got to figure out the right path to take, right? So you don't end up like shooting snow back at your house or covering up, you know, a car that's parked in the driveway or hitting bushes or, you know, you just got to say, all right, you get it down to a system kind of like, you know, you do when you mow the lawn, you know which way to go, which looks the best and what is most efficient.
Sure.
And I think that's the case with these
as
well.
And what model did you actually settle on? What do you use now?
I ended up purchasing this Craftsman that I had tested and talked about in the story.
Okay.
It was this bigger, supersized one with the 28-inch pack clearance.
Nice.
And it wasn't because it necessarily was a better brand. I'm not shilling for Craftsman over the Ahrens or any of these others. It just happened to be that I had tested it. It worked very well. It was the right size. And to be completely frank with you, it was in my garage, and the thought of like disassembling it and taking it back was more than I could bear. So, given it worked really well, and that I'd have to have, you know, done my research and then gone and, you know, kicked out another brand that was the same size, gotten that back in the car, gotten it into my garage, assembled it. You know, I'm not taking anything away from the Craftsman. I've seen people write in on the websites on the Wall Street Journal. They've been quite happy with their Craftsman. That was another thing that made me really consider doing it. But, you know, so far so good, and I'm just, you know, counting up the money I save each time on the plow, hopefully I'll have that, you know, paid back in, you know, two to three years, depending on how much snow we get.
Yeah, this year you might, who knows, we still have a lot of time left.
I know, exactly. If only I had done this story in, like, November, it would have been better.
All right. Well, that's interesting. So it sounds like the nice thing about the other thing, the Craftsman, with that large of a model, obviously you need, you know, a fair bit of space to store it in your garage. And so you have that available, and the maintenance you have to consider. So it can end up being pricey. But as you said, if you're paying for a plow each time and you get a lot of these snowstorms, that adds up as well. So
now what about the opposite end of it? I talked to someone the other day. They were doing an article on do-it-yourself projects that have health benefits. And, you know, some people might want to say, you know what, I'll take an old snow shovel and I'll just go at it, you know, get my heart rate up.
240 feet, Brian?
Maybe not 240 feet, but, you know, my driveway is only, 30 or 40 feet long. So,
No, trust me, I definitely had like a little bit of, as I noted in the piece, a little bit of carbon, carbon emissions guilt here doing this. But I mean, look, at 240 feet, if I had a full day to do it, frankly, I wouldn't be talking to you guys because I'd still be out there shoveling. So
either that or in traction, you know.
one or the other, spending my money on hospital bills and a chiropractor. But, you know, look, I'm all for shoveling and the physical activity as much as you can do it. I think you also have to be realistic about, you know, how much you can get done in a day doing that. And if, you know, I have a friend, he's incredibly athletic. He woke up this morning in his house. He emailed me from the train as he was going in and said, you know, I just didn't have time to shovel my walk before I left. I couldn't get everything done before I had to go make the train. So he's going to come home tonight, and like you, you know, it's going to be covered in ice, and he's going to have a harder time of it. I think his instinct is right. I mean, again, I'd be all for using the manual labor, but sometimes you just can't. And with a 240 feet long driveway, I really think that's not particularly efficient use of time. So this gets it done pretty fast. And I will say this too, you know, I mean, I broke a pretty good sweat out there pushing this thing around. I mean, it's not as if it's there's no manual labor to it. It is, you know, moving them is a good workout. And again, I think there's just something to being outside yourself and doing it. I mean, again, this is opposed to using a plow, but you feel this sense of accomplishment. And I, it's one of these things where I really just don't believe people people move into their homes these days. They don't know how to take care of them in general. They don't know how they tick. They spend more time researching buying an iPod than they do learning how to work their land and how to work their home. And
that's an interesting point. Yeah, it's true.
You know, I just think it's a good idea for everybody. You don't have to do it forever. You can pay somebody to do it if you have the money, but it's a really good thing to know how your house works and the mysteries of it, and to know you could take care of it if you had to, if you lost your job, which we're seeing a lot of that in this economy, to know that you could step in with your own two hands and take care of things.
Sure.
You may not always do it, but I think that's important.
Now, what about the neighborhood kids? I mean, when I was a kid, you know, my father would send me to the neighbor's house who had, one of these behemoth snowblowers, you know, made in the 50s, you know, probably even heavier than the Craftsman you're talking about. And my instruction was to clear the neighbor's driveway and walk first and then do ours and then three other neighbor's driveways. And then when I was done, I was instructed to go around the block and do all the sidewalks. And,
right.
You know, so
where
I was.
Where were you when I was going?
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know.
240 feet, Brian. You lived, your driveways were like 40 feet.
Right. But I went around the entire block. I mean, I just started
around
the corner and went all the way around and, you know, maybe someone would come out.
And you put and your
give,
hand out.
And give me a couple of bucks or something, you know,
yep.
And maybe they wouldn't, and it didn't matter because I was expected to do it regardless. And we don't see much of that these days. You know, I'd be glad to, you know, pay a couple of kids couple of bucks to shovel my driveway, but no one's asked.
That's because you only offer a couple bucks.
Well, or whatever, you know?
Well, it's that whole notion of the entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, that's what the entrepreneurial spirit encompassed when you were growing up. But now if a kid thinks they're going to make money, what are they going to do? They're going to start a blog. They're going to go online. They're going to, you know, try and make money like that. There's just not so much... we don't see so much of kids going out and sort of, you know, like you did, hustling, using their hands and using their bodies to sort of, you know, do work and do labor like that. And I do think it actually would be a very good opportunity for a kid now, to earn some money. I mean, I think there was an episode, and I can't remember if it was 60 Minutes or somewhere else recently, that talked a lot about how students are going back into the trades now, because what they're seeing is that everyone else is getting laid off, but the plumbers are still working, the electricians are still working. You know, if your sink leaks, somebody's got to come. And I think there's something to, you know, again, knowing, like we were just saying, knowing how to take care of a house and the things around it.
Absolutely. And that's part of the niche that we fill. We're finding a lot of people asking us simple questions, you know, calling us up or emailing us and saying, you know, hey, I got a, you know, XYZ, it's not working around the house. What should I do? And we try to give them the advice, you know, and save a couple of bucks from calling a plumber in or whoever.
Yep. Yep.
So.
All right, Wendy. Well, we appreciate your time, and we will, I certainly enjoyed your two articles, and we'll put links to those on our website.
Great. Nice to talk to you guys, and I've enjoyed reading your reading and listening to some of your podcast online. I liked what you said about the table saw and not necessarily needing one, and you can get by with a circular saw.
Sure.
I thought that was really true.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, and we appreciate it, and maybe we'll talk to you again sometime.
All right. Good luck with your driveways.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Wendy. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's all we have for this week's Handy Guys podcast. And we'll
was episode, what, 50.5, right?
50.5. We'll be back with episode 51, and it is a lightning round of Ask Brian questions. I'm going to fire off 10 questions that we've received from listeners or that he's answered previously on one of the Yahoo, Ask Yahoo forums. And we're going to just, I'm just going to rattle them off, and he's got to answer them concisely. We can see if we do it in the space of a show and do it well,
hopefully.
All right. See you then.
Want to be notified of every new Handy Guys podcast episode? Simply enter your email address in our subscription box at handyguyspodcast.com.